Okay.
Yeah, thank you. If you could read out the question one by one first, would be fine.
Okay, no problems. So the first question, I have often heard and read too that this is often used to discourage people from attaining samadhi, that when your mind is concentrated, often you see illusions, spirits, etc., which is very disturbing and not useful at all for the path to enlightenment. I follow Venerable Ajahn Brahm's instructions for meditation as taught by the Buddha in the Anapanasati Sutta. Need we care about these warnings? Okay, so this is a very question which is often discussed in Buddhist circles. In my own experience in meditation and in teaching meditation for many years, personally, I don't think I've ever really come across any meditators for whom seeing visions or anything like that is a major problem. Actually, seeing visions and so on isn't something which is restricted to meditation. I mean, even people who are, just in ordinary states of mind can sometimes see these things. Sometimes they might be things that are just our own imagination. They're just purely subjective experiences. Perhaps in other cases, then it might be something which is a genuine perception of some kind of reality that we're not normally aware of. Most of the time, if these things happen in meditation, most meditators, I think, have enough common sense to be able to recognize them for what they are and to just keep on going with their meditation. Visions and lights and so on, in and of themselves, are not really a problem. They're just something that happens. The only problem that can arise is if the meditator gets caught up in them, if they get too interested in them and begin to take these visions as being the point of the meditation. Perhaps sometimes you might get conceited, think that I can see things that others can't. And so these kinds of things can be a bit distracting, but the problem isn't the visions as such. The problem is what you think about them or how you imagine them. But generally speaking, most meditators, if they have a reasonable amount of wisdom and they have some good guidance so that they know what their meditation is about, they'll just recognize these things for what they are. And there might be pleasant or unpleasant experiences, but like any other pleasant or unpleasant experiences, you're just aware of it. Oh, that's how it is. And you let it go. Don't worry about it too much. Certainly, and what I would say most important is that this kind of thing should never be anything that stops anybody from meditating. Now, this is kind of crazy, really. There's no sutta anywhere where the Buddha says don't meditate because you might see some lights and get distracted from the path. So why even bother trying to start the path? This is crazy logic. This is not Buddhist logic. So these things are not something which should make us doubt meditation or make us stop meditation. All they should do is make us meditate a little bit more carefully. And if we do that, then I don't think we should have any problems. So before I go on with the next question, I'd just like to ask if there's any feedback on that, or does anybody there have any more questions or like to comment on what I've just said? Okay, well, I'm not hearing anything at this end, so either we've dropped out or you're all happy and content there.
Are we on?
Let's go on to the second question.
Second question. Okay, good. No problem. Okay, so here we have another question from somebody who said that they, and I'm not sure how we can do that, but somebody's noted that they're not going to be here at this session, but they asked if somebody could maybe mail them an email, a small note with the response, but I'll leave that to you.
Sorry. Venerable, I think Dania is working on putting this on a website, so we will let you know the link.
Okay. So the first question. At the onset of meditation in mindfulness, I've come to realize different forms of mindfulness at different times suits me to calm the mind before getting to the breath. For example, at times awareness of the most significant observance by the five body senses or corresponding mind senses. At times, it's to watch greed, hatred, and delusion. At times it's the mindfulness of the breath itself. At times it is Maitri. At times the awareness of the world built on the four elements. Thereafter, the focus goes to the breath at no particular physical point or part, comes naturally. My question is, since there doesn't seem to be a particular order or consistency in how I get to the breath, can you please advise if there should be an order to it? So again, that's a very good question, a very practical question for meditation. Now, as you all know, the Buddha taught many different kinds of meditations. In the Visuddhimagga, it has 40 different kinds of meditation, and if you look in the suttas, there's actually probably quite a few more. All of those meditations...
Can I interrupt a bit?
Of course, please.
I think if you knock out video, then it might get a better reception here. We find that it's a little breaking up. The sound is breaking up. So if you cancel video and only send audio, it might get better reception.
The video is...
Did you hear that?
Yes, we heard that. Thank you. The video is not on at this end. We can't get the video to work even if we wanted to.
Venerable sir, there seems to be some feedback coming back from your speakers. We can hear our voice kind of echo of the sound. Is that could be a problem?
But the problem is really that voice is breaking up a bit.
Okay, is it good enough to continue, or should we stop this and try again by calling on a landline or something?
Hello?
I think we should continue like this.
Okay, no problems. So if it does break up and you can't understand what I'm saying, then please just interrupt me and I'll repeat it.
I am recording it and I'll upload it.
Okay. Okay, so this is a question about what to do, whether we should do a preparation practice before starting the breath meditation. So often this is actually a very good idea. When we first come to sit meditation, the mind tends to be beset or afflicted by sort of more coarse thoughts and emotions and so on. So, you know, we're thinking about what we've just eaten or what we've just done, or we've got some worry and so on. And it takes some time for the mind to settle down to a place that's quite subtle. And so to help the mind do that, what can be useful is to recognize what is the particular problem that you have at that time, and then use a certain kind of meditation that's going to be appropriate to help to soothe that particular form of suffering. And then when the mind feels reasonably settled and reasonably clear, then to move to the breath. And so that's a technique that many meditators find useful. So if, according to the question, somebody's been doing that already and they find that it's working, then I'd say, terrific, keep going. The only thing that I would add would be that it's useful to reflect at the end of the meditation. Just reflect and think back about what happened, about how your mind was before you started the meditation, what emotions you may have...
May I interrupt a bit again?
Please.
May I interrupt a bit? The second question, would you mind reading it out and start from there again, because it was not very clear here.
Okay, sorry, my apologies. I'll paraphrase that question briefly for you. So the question was that the person is asking that when they're doing breath meditation, when they start the breath, they come to sit down to start breath meditation, they begin by doing sometimes a variety of different kinds of meditation. For example, watching greed, hatred, and delusion, being aware of the four elements, or developing Maitri meditation, and so on. So they might do a different one of these meditations each time they sit before they begin the breath meditation. So they were just asking about this kind of practice. So again, to repeat, you know, I think that's a good practice. And the most important thing is to reflect and to understand how your mind is and how that particular meditation that you're using is going to be helpful for you in that particular case. And so, of course, the Buddha taught many different techniques which have a particular function. For example, obviously you practice Maitri to overcome anger, or practice Asubha Kamatana to overcome desire, and so on. So there are many of these meditations which have been taught to overcome particular issues and problems. And so that's a starting point and something for you to reflect on when your mind is, you know, in a particular way, or your mood is like this or like that. What is useful? Sometimes, for example, if you're feeling a bit sad and depressed, then doing Buddha Anusati is very useful to uplift your mind before starting the meditation. So each time you meditate, to reflect like that, so that you know what's the best meditation to use at that particular time. Okay, so that's my answer for that second question. So is that clear for everyone there, or would you like to ask any more about that?
I think that was very clear, and the voice was also very clear.
Oh, good, excellent.
Good.
We're getting there. Okay, so this is the second question from the same person. They ask, this is a more subtle kind of question. They said, mindfulness is very much in the present, but at times I get lost as to where am I on the path to where I want to reach. It's like I get comfortable in the present moment, but I lose track of my destination, or where on the path to my destination am I? The question is, can you please let me know if there is a sutta by the Buddha which addresses the above? Now, I've had a bit of a think about this, and I have to admit I can't think of specifically a sutta which addresses that particular issue. I think it is an interesting and important issue, that when you're practicing, you can be very mindful and you can be very content, but you're in the present moment. You forget that there's actually more to be done. You forget that this is a path to be developed. Of course, the paradox of it is that it's that very contentment and being in the present moment which is the fastest way of practicing the path. So, as well as those teachings on contentment and so on, the Buddha also taught very often about having a sense of urgency and having a sense of energy to apply to the practice. So that if you find that you're getting too complacent, which is easily something that can happen, especially when you've been meditating for a number of years. Usually when we start to meditate, you know, we're very enthusiastic about it and we really look forward to it and we can see the benefits. And then after a few years, we start to get maybe a bit lazy or a bit complacent. We don't sort of see steady improvement like we did in the beginning. And so at that time, it's useful to focus on developing energy, developing enthusiasm, and the Buddha taught many methods of doing that. For example, by associating with energetic people is one very good way. By doing a lot of walking meditation rather than too much sitting meditation also is another good way of rousing up energy. And of course, by doing meditations like the meditation on death, Maranānusati, where we recollect our own mortality and the briefness of our span of life here, how rare the opportunity is for us to hear the Dhamma and to practice the Dhamma. And so if we recollect on these things, then that gives rise to that sense of urgency, so we don't get complacent in the path. So I hope that that's a useful explanation of that question. Is that, anybody have any other questions or responses to that?
I think that was very fine, okay. And we could hear it very clearly. Thank you very much. Let's proceed to the next one.
Okay, very good. Excellent. So the next question from Priyanta. This says, when I'm practicing meditation, sometimes I experience the sound of my own heartbeat. At that time, I don't feel my breath. So is it okay to proceed with the heartbeat, or else do I have to look for the breath? Please explain for me. Well, I would suggest at that time when you continue watching your breath, even if the breath doesn't exist anymore, you just keep watching that space where the breath has disappeared. What happens when you meditate is that if you look in the Anapanasati Sutta, you know, it talks about the Pasambhayam Kaya Sankharam, the tranquilizing of the bodily activities. And this is, you know, this is not just something that's in the sutra, it's something you experience, you know, as a reality every time you meditate. The breath becomes much more subtle, the energies in the body become much more subtle and settle down. And as it does that, sometimes the breath can become so subtle that you almost can't see it. It's as if there's an interplay between the brightness of your awareness and your mindfulness, which can go up and down, and then the tranquility. Sometimes the mind can become very tranquil, and so tranquil, and the body and the breath become so tranquil that the awareness isn't quite refined enough and quite bright enough to catch the breath going in and out. But unless you're either dead or in very deep samadhi, then you are still breathing, even if it's only very, very subtle. So rather than, if you go and start watching your heartbeat at that point in time, you've immediately switched your meditation objects. You've lost your resolution, and watching your heartbeat is like a different meditation. So these are the subtle ways that you get distracted from your meditation. Often we think in meditation, we think of the coarse things that will distract us from it, you know, watching TV or chatting to somebody. But actually, once we're in the meditation itself, the distractions are often these very subtle things. We lose that memory that our focus of meditation is supposed to be the breath, and instead we start watching something else, start watching our heartbeat or something like that. So don't watch your heartbeat. Keep watching the place where the breath is. Even if the breath stops, just keep watching the same place. Even if there's nothing happening there, just watch the emptiness. And if you stay there and keep watching very, 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 very patiently, just watching, just staying still, gradually you'll find the breath will come back again and you'll be able to see it much more subtly than it was before. Okay, so I hope that's a useful answer for that question for you. And any questions or response for that one?
Thank you very much. I think we should proceed to the next one.
Okay, very good. Thank you. So you're easily satisfied. That's good. Okay, now this is the last written question that I have here. And so this one says, okay, how can anyone progress in meditation without doing sitting meditation and observing breath? One may practice daily awareness and mindfulness over many other activities throughout the day. But if he does not practice any sitting meditation, can he have any progress? And will it be worth, say, practicing only the awareness of daily activities? Okay, so this is another question which people often ask. And I think that there's not a one-sided answer to this question. Now, let's step backwards a little bit before that question, before we go to answer it, and have a look at how the Buddha usually presented these things and how he usually talked about them. Of course, we know that the Buddha talked about the practice of what he called sampajanya, is the awareness, you know, going forth and returning, bending and stretching the limbs on acts with clear awareness. And he also talked about the practice of sitting meditation. When he didn't just talk about these things in isolation. He talked about them as part of an overall spiritual development. And that overall spiritual development we find most clearly taught in a teaching called the gradual training, the Anupabhasika. And that teaching is found in the first several suttas in the Digha Nikaya and many places in the Majjhima Nikaya and other places. And in the gradual training, Anupabhasika, as after undertaking the precepts and so on and so forth, the meditator does a variety of preliminary practices which help to prepare the meditator for meditation. And they include things like restraint of the senses, contentment, not sleeping too much, not eating too much. So these are all the kind of the basic things which are the grounding for our deeper development in spiritual practice. One of those practices, which is a grounding for meditation, is the awareness and mindfulness of one's daily activities. Okay, so this is the normal way this is taught, is as a preparation for meditation. And when these are ready, then one goes, sits meditation, establishes mindfulness, abandons the hindrances, practice jhanas, and so on and so forth. So the more subtle and more refined practices are those which are done from the practice of sitting meditation. So I think if we understand that context that the Buddha taught these things in, then that helps us to be able to make sense of that question. I think the answer to that question is, yes, it can be very useful to do that practice of mindfulness in your daily activities. And yes, somebody who does that can certainly develop and grow in their spiritual practice. And certainly this is an essential basis for our meditation. However, it's also something which is somewhat limited. It's something which doesn't allow our mind to go to deep levels of meditation. And so it doesn't act, it's not a replacement for meditation. It's one of those many things which we do to help establish the foundation for meditation. So if we are in a situation where it's not easy for us to do sitting meditation, we can't find the time or we're too busy or whatever, then yes, of course, we should try to practice that mindfulness through all of our activities, and we can still grow and develop through doing that. But when we have the chance to do some sitting meditation as well, we should do that. And at that time, we'll find that all of those efforts that we put into developing our mindfulness through our daily activities will come to fruit. And our meditation will go much more easily and much more will flow much more readily than it did beforehand. So hopefully that's clarified for you how I see that connection between the mindfulness in daily activities and the sitting meditation, which leads to deeper levels of samadhi. So again, this is the final written question that I've got here. So I'll just turn it back over to you, Venerable Metta Vihari, to see whether you have any responses or any further questions there.
We have the general problem that nobody asks public questions. May I ask them if they want to ask a private question, then we could do so?
Of course.
Is that all right with you?
Yes, what do you mean by a private question? Yes, please go ahead.
I'm sorry, we have very modest meditators here. Uh-huh. They don't seem to have anything to ask you. I'm sure they have lots of things in their mind, but let's wait till next time. I'm sure it'll come in the mail next time.
Okay.
Much merit to you for helping us with all this.
No problem.
Thank you.
Venerable sir, this is Prem. Shall we invite Ajahn Brahmali to give a kind of introduction to metta meditation, because we are fortunate enough here to have Sujato here occasionally to lead us in metta meditation, and he's in Australia. He's the guru on that field. So maybe we can invite him to give a very quick summary or some instructions on metta meditation as well. Would it be suitable at this time?
Oh, that would be very lovely. Not a quick one. I would like to have half an hour one. Thank you very much.
Well, I think maybe do the next one.
Yeah, next time maybe. But I'm not sure what Ajahn Sujato's program is. He doesn't know himself, actually.
That's true. Yeah.
That's the problem. So he's here today, so I'm trying to make the best use of it.
Well, how about we say, I think maybe just to do, just a few minutes of metta might be a little bit too short to do anything that's really useful. But how about, that's true, I'm not entirely sure that I'll be here next month, but I guess at the moment I'll probably be here next month. So maybe if you could, Venerable, just let people know that we might do like a special thing for metta meditation next time, and I might do a guided meditation, and you can also ask people, of course, can ask general questions, but if anyone has any questions specifically for metta meditation, maybe they could ask that for next time.
Thank you. Would you also give us a little talk on metta now, or what is that possible?
It's possible, sure, yeah. Shall we do that? Okay, we'll do that. All right. How much time do we have?
Yeah. meditation. They will be going for dharana in about half an hour. So, what time is your lunch, dharana? Another half an hour, is it? Hello?
When well, our dharana is over here. We have finished here.
Okay. Right, so we'll make it half an hour then.
Never want to come back.
30 minutes. Okay, so we're not getting a time here, but anyway, we'll do a little bit on metta. Okay. Okay, so what I might do is just talk a little bit about metta meditation first, and then we can maybe just do a short guided meditation if that's going to be suitable for everybody. I'm sure you all know the basics of what metta meditation is about. Of course, it's the meditation on loving kindness. Like all of the Buddha's the genuine Buddhist meditation, it's based on a reality, it's based on something which really exists, and of course that's that feeling or that emotion of metta. When we do metta meditation, when metta meditation is taught, very often it's taught as in like using words, like we use the words may I be happy and so on. And sometimes it just stops there. And so that we think that the words themselves are the meditation. But actually the words that we have in the various chants and methods for doing metta meditation, these are only the beginning. These are just the support for the meditation. It's not really the meditation itself. The meditation itself of metta meditation is the actual feeling of metta, the actual feeling of loving kindness. And the purpose of the method that we use is to help us to get in touch with that feeling and to help us to be able to develop that feeling consciously. Normally, if we're not meditating, you know, we have different feelings come and go, anger and jealousy and, you know, likes and dislikes and loving kindness and compassion and so on and so forth. And they come and they go all the time. And we don't really have much awareness of it, and we certainly don't have much control of it. So what we try to do in the metta meditation is to focus more on the feeling itself. Give rise to the feeling consciously, focus on it, hold it and keep it so that that feeling can become much more purified, much more steady and can be a useful basis for meditation. So this is what the purpose of the meditation method is for. Once we can do that and we can establish our minds clearly on that feeling of loving kindness, we can gradually develop that. Eventually we can let go of all the words and the concepts and the ideas around metta and loving kindness, and there's only the feeling left. And with that as a basis, then of course one can go to the deeper levels of samadhi and insight and so on. But the crucial thing for developing the metta meditation is to have a method which can help us to focus on those words, focus on, use the words to arouse the feeling and to develop and deepen that. Okay, and now the method that I'm using and that I teach is one that I learnt many years ago in Thailand from my teacher called Ajahn Mahachachai. And one of the things that Ajahn Mahachachai emphasizes is that one should always focus on the feeling of metta and loving kindness inside your body. So you focus your awareness on the feeling of the body as it's sitting there and let the feeling of metta come up inside that feeling of the body. And this sounds a little bit strange to describe it, and maybe it's a little bit difficult to understand until you've experienced it. But when you do experience it, what it does is it makes the feeling of metta so much more solid, so much more grounded, so much more steady. And this is how we keep the mind focused so that the feeling of metta isn't just something that comes and goes, but it's something which can be really used as a basis for samadhi and for deeper meditation. Okay. Now, we're just going to do a very, very short meditation here this morning. So, I obviously can't share all the details of this technique with you. The method that Ajahn Mahachachai uses is based on a method which you can find in the Visuddhimagga, where it talks about developing metta for oneself, for a loved person, for a neutral person and a disliked person, until eventually one can overcome any differences between those four. That's what they call Sima Sambheda, the breaking down of the barriers. But for this morning, we're just going to do a very short meditation, so we'll start out with the first one of those stages, which is loving kindness for oneself. When we're doing this stage of meditation, it's important to just let go of and not pay any attention to any feelings of doubting or sort of worrying about yourself or anything like that. Any other kind of thought or emotion or feeling or whatever, just abandon it. Don't pay any attention to it. There's only one thing that matters, and that's keeping that thought in mind. May I be happy. Not even reflecting or thinking about it. Not thinking about what does happiness mean, who am I really, or any of these kinds of questions. Just keeping the thought in mind to begin with. Okay? That's not the fulfillment of the meditation, it's the beginning of the meditation, is just to keep that thought in mind. May I be happy. And as we continue with that, we use those words to evoke the feeling of metta. Now, the feeling of metta, when it arises, can arise in many different ways. Different people can feel it differently. Sometimes it might be very strong or very weak, or it might come up in, you know, part of your body or in your whole body, or it might sort of be very even or very uneven, and so on and so forth. What we aim to do in the meditation is to keep that sense of patience and steadiness so that all of those variations even out, and the meditation becomes much more stable and much more reliable. And eventually, when we're doing it, we should be able to bring up the feeling of metta and recognize clearly that this is that feeling of metta and that we can use this for gaining samadhi with. So this is where we're headed towards. But in the beginning, of course, we'll have very different responses. Often, of course, the feeling of metta won't happen at all. We'll feel like nothing is going on, so we just have to be a bit patient then. Sometimes you might get a very strong feeling or very unusual feeling. Sometimes you can get even the opposite of what you expect, maybe anger or anything like that. Because we're getting in touch with these emotions and they're unpredictable. That's why we need to develop them. So don't be too worried if you have any of these kinds of unusual or strong responses that you don't understand when you're beginning the metta meditation. It's quite normal. Also, don't worry if you don't have any response. Just be patient and keep trying. Usually, over time, you'll find that these things tend to even out and the meditation becomes smoother and you'll get better results for it. Okay, so what we might do now is do maybe 10 or 15 minutes of some guided meditation. Okay? And so for this guided meditation, we're going to start out by practicing just mindful awareness for a few minutes and following that with some loving kindness for oneself. Okay? So those who are practicing, when we do that first few minutes of mindful awareness, if you're used to doing like Ajahn Brahm's practice that he does before the breath meditation, where he'll just practice a few minutes of silence and so on, then you can just do something similar to that. Okay. So let's do some meditation for about 10 or 15 minutes. So sitting quietly. Letting the mind settle inside your body. not worrying about the past, not running off to the future, just being clear and settled here and now. Noticing the feelings and sensations in the different parts of your body. The pressure of your seat. A touch of cloth on your skin. Letting go of everything, being content in the here and now. And when the mind feels reasonably settled and clear, focus the mind in the heart and say to oneself the words, may I be happy, may I be happy, may I be happy. Saying those words again and again and again. May I be happy, may I be happy. May I be happy. Saying the words clearly, evenly, steadily. Making a smooth and solid foundation for the mind. May I be happy, may I be happy, May I be happy. Whenever the mind wanders off, just bring it back. Patiently. Lovingly. And noticing, along with those words of metta, is something else. Something that's not words at all. And that's the feeling of metta. Very soft, very gentle. Warm feeling of loving kindness that arises in your heart. When you see that feeling, just gently hold that in your mind, keeping the feeling close and safe. May I be happy. May I be happy. May I be happy. Okay, now coming near the end of the meditation. And as the words of metta go, let the feeling of metta fade away, and allow the mind to come back to a neutral space, empty, open and clear. With the mind open and clear, just take a minute to reflect over the meditation we've done together. Inquiring into cause and effect. What just happened? How did my mind change? How did that meditation work? Did I experience that feeling of loving kindness? What's my mind like now compared to how it was at the start of the meditation? And finally, we can dedicate the merit of our practice. May all beings be happy, may all beings be well, may all beings finally realize Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu.